The first spark of this sermon ignited when I listened to Dan and Brenda Davis's sermon on ethical hunting. I nearly did not come to church that morning, as I thought it would mean listening to the Davises espousing their right to shoot, kill harmless animals in the name of food or sport. I'm glad I did attend that morning, as they forced me to see the other side of a coin that I previously thought only had one side. In the same vein, I hope you can put aside any pre-held beliefs you may have and listen as I try to explain why Unitarian Universalism, animal rights, and vegetarianism are such good bedfellows. After saying that, this sermon is not so much about animal rights, it's about human responsibilities. After all, teaching a child not to step on a caterpillar is as valuable to the child as it is to the caterpillar. Of the seven UU principles that we are meant to affirm and promote in our daily lives, four of them can easily be construed as being in accord with the main thrust of my vision: the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Why limit this principle just to people? Why not extend it to animals? Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Again, why not include animals within the remit of this principle? The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Likewise, how can the world be at peace and have justice for all when billions of animals are forced to lead barbaric and tortuous lives before they end up on our plates? Respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. This principle does not need to be modified or construed in any way to fit in with my thought processes. This principle is very important to me and is the one that I can most easily put into practice on a daily basis. I like to think I respected the web of all existence long before I had heard of Unitarian Universalism, but it certainly was good to hear that a religion gave such prominence to this type of idea. How did I arrive where I am today regarding my thoughts on animal rights, human responsibilities, and vegetarianism? I started off, like almost everyone else in this room, as a meat eater. Culinary Britain 40 years ago was dominated by the meat and two vegetables idea, and my family were no different. On my dad's side of the family, my grandfather was a butcher, with all that entailed. And on my mother's side of my family, my grandfather was a cowman for 40 years. So I come from a heritage rich in consuming animal products. My dad, in particular, was a vowed meat eater and remained so until his dying day. My journey to vegetarianism was a gradual one. It started with my decision to cut out red meat from my diet. I did this with a view to health reasons rather than for any kind regard to the animals that it was derived. I remember being in my kitchen about 25 years ago preparing a Christmas meal for my parents and my brother. My brother had been vegetarian for many years, and I knew my mother enjoyed vegetarian food, but I just knew it wouldn't be Christmas for my dad if he couldn't have his turkey. I therefore bought the smallest turkey I could find and proceeded to prepare it for cooking. Handling the raw turkey and thinking about the life it had probably led brought me to the realization that from that day onwards I would try to be vegetarian. I would be lying if I said that the smell of hot, crispy bacon has not tempted me over the years. I'm certainly not zealous about my vegetarianism, as I will eat soup made from chicken broth or eat the specks of bacon in a quiche. I even eat fish, which technically classifies me as a pescatarian, not a vegetarian. I think you would agree with me when I say that pets enrich our lives. We treat them like part of the family. We feed them, we pay their vet bills, we let them sleep on our beds at night, and we cry when they die. I own two cats, but as any cat owner will testify, cats don't have owners, they have staff. I think man's capacity to love and bond with other species is one of the joys of being human. Mahatma Gandhi once said, "The greatness of a nation can be judged by the way its animals are treated." I do not think he was only referring to our pets. Why is it that we classify some animals as companions and others as dinner? And by virtue of that distinction, we feel entitled to treat farm animals with cruelty as long as it reduces the price per pound at the supermarket. We have made a semantic distinction between some animals and others. Some we love, and others we not only butcher, but torture as well. We forget that they all have something in common with us. They all draw breath from the same source as we do. They are all parts of the earth community. And as someone wisely once said, all God's critters have a place in the choir. Imagine you are at a dinner party. Mouth-watering smells are emanating from the kitchen, and your host brings a pot of steaming, savory stew to the table. After eating several mouthfuls, you ask your friend for the recipe. "I'd be happy to tell you," she tells you. You begin with 5 pounds of well-marinated golden retriever meat. You would probably freeze mid-bite as you think about the meat in your mouth. Why is it that we react so differently to different types of meat? It's not because there is a physical difference between them. It's because our perception of them is different. We love dogs and eat cows, both being sentient beings with real feelings, preferences, and consciousness. Not only do we perceive meat from different animals differently, different humans view the same meat differently. For example, a Hindu may have the same response to being served beef as an American would to being served dog meat. Some Europeans routinely eat horse meat, and other cultures eat a whole range of animals that the typical American would not put near his or her mouth. We choose to classify animals as pest, prey, or food, and our judgment determines how we relate to it. There are laws in every state prohibiting cruelty to animals. However, animals destined for human consumption are exempt. In practical terms, it means that if an animal is raised with a view to gleaning its eggs, milk, meat, skin, or wool, you can, without restriction, subject that animal to conditions that, if were applied to your family pet, could land you in jail. Paul McCartney once said, "If slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be vegetarian. We would feel better about ourselves and better about the animals, knowing we're not contributing to their pain." It is only through our ignorance, our reluctance to see, or willingness to look the other way, that the livestock industry is able to continue its barbaric treatment of animals. The factory farming industry goes to great lengths to hide their ghastly procedures from our view because they know that the general public are essentially animal lovers and would turn against eating their products in our millions if the truth was widely known. I'm not going to describe the gory details about the lives that factory farm animals lead before they end up on our plates. I'll leave that to your imaginations. Suffice to say, if the same treatment were handed out to humans, it would be deemed the animal equivalent of what innocent humans suffered during the Holocaust. For those of you that I have provoked into thinking more about your food choices, I recommend watching the movie Food Incorporated, or read the book Why We Eat Cows and Love Dogs. Our incongruent feeling towards different animals is factory farming's trump card, and they certainly know how to play it. They go to great lengths to create the disconnect between the way they treat animals and our purchasing decisions at the supermarket. The establishments that produce the bulk of our meat are mainly invisible, and that is no accident. They are often located in remote areas away from prying eyes, and their trucks are often sealed and unmarked. We don't see what is going on because we are not meant to see what is going on. A friend of mine recently took her son to Temple Hill Farm near Luckett's. Her son became enamoured with one of the cows, apart from its wet tongue. When told that people actually eat cow's tongues, he was shocked. Her son, along with many other children and adults, had previously made no connection between animals happily grazing in a field and the nicely packaged portions of meat found in the supermarket. Prominent Unitarian Universalists from the past have been on the vanguard of great social change. UUs were active in the promotion of suffrage and women's rights in the early 20th century. UUs were prominent in the civil rights movement in the 1960s. And today, UUs are promoting an end to discrimination against gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender people. I don't see why UUs of today can't also take the lead in promoting compassion for all animals. Even if it means we pay a little bit more for ethically raised and slaughtered animal products. Unitarian Universalists have a proud history of standing up to unjust social issues, and I see no reason as to why we cannot apply ourselves to combating the propaganda from the factory farming industry. After all, we have changed hearts and minds before, and I see no reason why we cannot do the same with animal advocacy. UUs have been proud to stand against injustice, oppression, and cruelty. Surely these goals should include our attitudes towards animals. From the moment we are born, we become engulfed within the power of the meat producers. We are fed Gerber baby food meat products, followed by enticements to eat Happy Meals at McDonald's. Did we ever question our parents or teachers when they told us that eating meat made us strong? I don't believe that indoctrination and sublimation are too strong words to use when describing the power and influence that factory farming industries have upon us. As well as the actual cruelty to animals, there are other reasons to consider vegetarianism. Firstly, there are many environmental reasons, including deforestation, biodiversity loss, soil erosion, and greenhouse gas emissions. Also, consider your health. Do you really want to digest growth hormones and antibiotics? Because that's exactly what you're doing, unless you're buying ethically raised meat. I believe this approach is a good compromise for those of us still yearning for our meat and animal products. The other benefit of eating these products is that they are raised locally, resulting in lower transportation costs and support the local economy. Another approach is to adopt the Meatless Monday idea. This would be a great place to embark on a new relationship with the meat in your diet. I could spend the next 5 minutes quoting various statistics, but to underline my argument, I'm going to use just one. It takes 2,000 pounds of grain to produce enough meat to feed one person with enough meat and other animal products for 1 year. If that person ate the grain directly, it would only take 400 pounds to feed them. In other words, it takes 1/5 of the amount of grain if the animal is bypassed from the equation. The animals of the world exist for their own reasons, and it is very arrogant for man to think that they were only put on this earth to be exploited to our own ends. They were not made for humans any more than black people were made for white or women created for men. As the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, Reverend Peter Morales, put it, "The realization that how we treat animals is an ethical issue grows out of this spirituality of compassion and awareness of connection. There is no reason compassion should stop at human beings. Of course we should be concerned with the treatments of animals. This is a spiritual and religious issue." This statement was reinforced at the 2011 Unitarian Universalist General Assembly when it approved a statement of conscience on ethical eating. It called on UUs to eat ethically by becoming aware of the ways that our food choices affect our health and the planet's health. Just like Emily the cow in the story for all ages, we have surreptitiously been herded into a lineup and taught to follow a course that's been laid out for us. But, also like Emily, we can choose to break free from the crowd. In conclusion, I don't expect to have converted you to a vegetarian diet this morning, but I do hope some of you at least pause for thought the next time you are about to put a steak in your shopping basket and the wide-ranging effects of continuing to eat a meat-based diet. I will leave you with the following thought from Martin Luther King Jr. Never, never be afraid to do what's right, especially if the well-being of a person or animal is at stake. Society's punishments are small compared to the wounds we inflict on our soul when we look the other way. Let it be so.